Okay, this is session number 34, recorded on March 26, 2007. March 26 being Hex Body's 24th birthday. Hex Body, a guy on fivebodied.com. And we're doing side one, and we're doing Croaker. And we were last week in the middle of doing the section on Panic Money, and I guess we're going to continue with that. We didn't finish going through the particular parts of that section, which is on page 90 of my book. But just to finish the thought at the end of the last session, talking about the fragility, the weakness of the old esoteric traditions, talking about, you mentioned Samadhi, Nirvana, and esoteric techniques to get people to drop their social conditioning. The big problem that McLuhan saw for those esoteric traditions of the 20th century was that we were being conditioned by something that put you in a boundaryless or boundless universe, a multiverse, a place with no boundaries, and that was what you were conditioned by. So what anti-environment, what technique do you come up with to decondition people from that situation? And the old esoteric traditions, which just dealt with your chemical body and its conditioning, probably aren't going to be adequate to the new conditioning. So that was the problem that McLuhan worked on.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to say that, finish that thought. And now we're at the... let me just read where we're at, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Continue with Croaker. This is a section... in the book, The Postmodern Scene, which came out in 1986, written by Croaker and David Cook, and we're doing the preface. And this section is page 2, Roman numeral 2 to Roman numeral 7. Okay, so this part called Panic Money, Croaker says, facing the onslaught of the cancellation of the referent, money finds itself circulating faster and more violently to maintain itself as a universal clinamen. Clinamen meaning something that spins off, almost like a digression or a diversion. But in the age of superconductors, the chilling effect is immense as everything approaches the end of Einstein's world at the speed of light. In this world, the parasitism of money begins to slow the process. This pushes money into even longer hours with the advent of 24-hour exchange. Yet the redshift, in quotes, the redshift in the velocity of circulation only hastens the disappearance of money from the planet, prefigured in the vast sums for Star Wars. Already money has given place to its opposite, credit, in the creation out of nothing, ex nihilo, out of nothing, which marks all contemporary advances from insider trading to takeover bids. Just so far the game is up becomes evident in the repudiation of the debts of the large corporations or of the working class. Everything is owned, possessed by the other, so that the economy can only run on empty, in quotes. Money becomes the spent fuel of an overheated reactor. Nobody knows what to do with it, yet all know it must be expended. Money as value only appears at the vanishing point of its afterimage. It is no longer one's filthy lucre, only that of the sanitized electronic display of the computer monitor. For money always moves on in its role as the chief vagrant of the collapsing capitalist economy. Now, you wanted to bring in some basic quotes about money, right?
To get
a bearing.
Yeah. Well, I thought it might be interesting to just read a couple of definitions, kind of the history of money from feudalism until we get up to where Croaker starts talking about money just sort of blowing apart, like...
Yeah, in the hyper-modern phase.
So we have, in the Middle Ages, we have feudalism, system of economic and political organization, as in Europe in the Middle Ages, in which land-holding lords granted land to vassals in return for service and homage. So that's before we have money at all. And then we get into mercantilism, the doctrine developed in the West after the decline of feudalism, that a nation's economy could be strengthened by governmental protection of home industries, by increased foreign exports, and by the accumulation of gold and silver. So now the state owns all the gold and silver, and the value of money is tied directly to bullion. And then we get into a free trade and a free market economy. Free market is where the price of an item is arranged by mutual consent of sellers and buyers, with supply and demand of that item not being regulated by a government. However, it requires traders themselves do not coerce or defraud each other, so that all trades are morally voluntary. So this is more the kind of economics I think that the average person is sort of thinks about when they think of the economy in traditional terms. Free trade is trade between countries that is free of import-export quotas, duties, or other governmental restrictions. I don't know that we've ever had free trade in that sense, because I think we've always imposed tariffs, but that would be sort of the ideal situation.
That's mercantilism.
No, mercantilism is when you have money tied to gold and silver.
Oh, then you shift into what, capitalism?
Yeah, capitalism. I should have.
Did you say that?
No, I didn't. I should have a. Let's see if I have. No, I didn't.
Yes, say this. Okay, maybe redefine capitalism again.
Let me see what. I talked about free trade and the free market, but let's see what Webster's has to say about capitalism. Capitalism, an economic system in which the means of production and distribution are privately owned and prices are chiefly determined by open competition in a free market. So there we have feudalism, mercantilism, and capitalism. And in mercantilism, money is tied to the gold and bullion. But then we get to capitalism, and during that era, we have a situation where money gets, the paper starts getting printed, and it gets decoupled from bullion itself. And it's interesting, Adam Smith in The Wealth of Nations, 1776, he was dubious about paper money. He said that this has made me entertain great doubts concerning the benefits of banks, and he called it paper credit or counterfeit money, which foreigners will not accept in payment and which at any great disorder in the state will reduce to nothing. So he thought that, you know, he called paper money a form of credit, and of course it is. Instead of somebody giving you a piece of gold, they give you a piece of paper that says this is worth, you know, a quarter ounce of gold or something like that. and it could, of course, become worthless if all of a sudden there's no gold to back it, but we got through Adam Smith's worst nightmare, because that's exactly what happened. I mean, we decoupled the dollar from gold. Here's a quote from, just doing a thing on money, here's a quote from David Hume, 1750. He says, "Money is not the wheels of trade. It is the oil which renders the motion of the wheels more smooth and easy. It appears that want of money can never injure any state within itself, for men and commodities are the real strength of any community." So he's starting to say that, you know, owning a bunch of gold, the state owns a bunch of gold and diamonds and jewels and treasure boxes full of stuff, that's not where their real wealth is. Their real wealth is in their ability to, for men to have, to be able to produce labor and commodities, and that's where the wealth of the economy really lies. So this is sort of a brief history of some of the ideas of money. And the definition of money, which is from Webster's, money is commonly defined as any good or token that functions as a medium of exchange that is socially and legally accepted in payment for goods and services in a settlement of debt, and in a settlement of debts. Money also serves as a standard value for measuring the relative worth of different goods and services. The use of money provides an easier alternative to barter, which is considered in a modern complex economy to be inefficient because it requires a coincidence of wants between traders and an agreement that these needs are of equal value and therefore a transaction can occur. So we can see how gold turns into paper and paper turns into commodities and labor, and then we get to Croker, and it seems like all of that's disappearing. As a matter of fact, I came across the quote that I was trying to remember the last couple times, where he talks about the music and the economy. This page 55 of his book, Spasm. He says, crash music exists in a culture smasher, a cultural cyclotron, in a culture of crash economy. This is to say that culture is not a reflex of political economy, but that society is now a reflex of key shifts in music theory and practice. Music rules in the quantum age because sound moves faster than the speed of light, thus quickly eclipsing history. Study music theory, then, as a laboratory of big transformation in power and economy. They will have all their punk period, their sampler phase, their house music era, their heavy metal economy, and their rap aesthetics for the co-modified body. And then you had made a comment to him, music is the hologram of coherency for our culture.
In the interview with Eben.
Yeah, in the interview with Eben. So, you know, we begin with money as something which is pretty easy to understand. You know, you got a hunk of gold. Gold is a precious metal. It's rare. That gives it a certain value because the supply and demand is such that not everybody can have it. You know, and then, but once we get out of feudalism and labor markets begin, it doesn't make sense for people to carry gold around. There's not really enough of it anyway, so they issue certificates of credit that are equal the amount of certain value of gold. And then we get to the place where even money is beginning to become, like he says, it's not the essential thing. It's just it just greases the wheels for the wealth of labor and commodities. And then we get to, you know, this place where we're talking about Croker, where we're in the stratosphere, and it's hard to understand what the hell's going on anymore.
Yeah, it's interesting you say in the crash quote that music travels faster than the speed of light.
Yeah, I don't get that, because sound does not travel faster than the speed of light.
Right, but he's trying to point out that we're moving from a speed of light society to a society based on thought.
Mm-hmm.
You have this where we, in the last session, the part that we discussed was, but in the age of superconductors, the chilling effect is immense as everything approaches the end of Einstein's world at the speed of light. Now, he's writing that in the middle 80s. And then five or more years later, he's now talking about acoustic space or just sound going past Einstein's world. So I just want to point out that you got a later phenomenon in that he's describing in the Spasm book, which comes after the Black Monday of October 1987.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean, where you had the computers crashed.
Yeah, I remember that day.
Yeah, so this is what we're reading now is before, in a way, Croker is predicting this, panic money. And then he processes that phenomenon and writes about it in the Panic Encyclopedia in 89, and then he upgrades it to the crash pattern in the early 90s. So it would, from your quotes, is that money greases the wheels. Is that the phrase?
Yeah.
Yeah, it lubricates. So it's like a form of democracy, allows everybody to engage in the, more and more participate in the trade of goods and services, and they don't have to lug their gold around with them. So you get a mobility happening, and then that becomes an environment. And by 1750, when Hume was writing that, people recognize it as a form of information or a form, a medium they wouldn't articulate, but they begin to see it as a medium that helps generate a speed up or a spreading of the wealth of the society.
Mm-hmm.
Now, McLuhan then points out, with the help of Harold Innes, that the new medium of radio speeds things faster than the visual ownership that money represented. You know, when you buy something, someone else loses it, but with radio, everybody's sharing the same information. Nobody's losing or gaining. Everybody's actually gaining, in simple terms, not looking at the disservices. But that is a new environment speeding human energies.
Well,
that obsolesces money, and money collapses.
And it's implanting the same through advertising. It's implanting the same idea in everyone's head simultaneously. You know, buy a
right. That creates a lot of wealth. So money as a agent of individualism and property weakens under the impact of radio, and then it's brought back no longer as ground, but as a figure that everybody shares as the welfare state.
Mm-hmm.
Then the digital world comes in, and goes faster than the radio and TV advertising era. Remember, advertising with people with remotes, that it becomes weakened as a ground.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big problem to get people to notice advertising, because they can clip it off, right?
Right.
General remotes. So get that in the 80s. So we'll call that a digital effect. Croker is talking about the digital effect in the 80s and 90s. That is a new situation that McLuhan and Innes didn't deal with, though McLuhan gets pretty close to foreseeing what Croker deals with. He did an editorial in the New York Times, an op-ed, September 21st, 1974, where he talks about the effect of computers leading to a gambling casino.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to see Croker jumping off from the gambling casino specter into something even more amazing,
right,
or more panicky.
Now they're trying to regulate gambling on the internet because it's getting to be a big problem.
Right, but gambling, McLuhan meant the whole economy became a gambling casino.
Mm-hmm.
You knew that.
Yeah, we mentioned that last week, and the fact that the fungibility of commodities and money, and you could gamble, gamble on anything.
Right.
And
right after the Einstein's World of the Speed of Light, Croker says, in this world, the parasitism, or parasiting, of money begins to slow the process. This pushes money into even longer hours with the advent of 24-hour exchange, or 24-hour fungibility. So you've got...
money begins to slow what process?
This process of digital life. So radio collapsed the money economy of the 20s because it was too much wealth being generated in the movies, radio, and electronic services for the money to measure,
mm-hmm,
or to frame. Now he's saying that money being slower offers a service in the digital hyper age, hyper modern age, mm, by slowing things down.
Oh, right. So as we pointed out, there was a period when it's greasing the wheels and allowing the economy to speed up.
That's when it's ground.
Mm. Okay.
It becomes bigger when electricity becomes the ground.
Uh-huh. Then it becomes a kind of a glue to help or sludge to slow things down.
Well,
we know money is friction, right? It's friction.
Yeah.
It's a friction-based concept. So it provides the friction to slow things down rather than being a lubricant to speed things up.
That's right. So... and that's where, you know, the Republican Party and neoconservatism comes in the 80s and 90s, or the late 70s, early 80s. The whole thing of slowing down what people perceive is so fast it disappears. It wipes out meaning for people.
Yeah.
So that's why money, it became a fad to hang out with businessmen in the 80s, because they were maintaining stability for the chemical body.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and that's just a reaction to the new environment. They don't know consciously why they're doing it, but they just gravitate towards it. But look up the physics term red shift. Let's see what Croker means by that. What is the actual part?
Okay.
Is the red shift the slowdown?
I think I know what it means, but I'll see what Webster's system.
Get a definition.
Okay. Tendency of light waves from distant luminous bodies, such as galaxies, to decrease in frequency with movement away from the observer. See the Doppler effect.
Okay, so that's a slowing down. I just want to get the meaning here, because he says, in this world, the parasitism, the parasiting of money, it's just like a, it's an old medium. It's just hanging on. It's a parasite. Useless. In this world, the parasitism of money begins to slow the process. This pushes money into even longer hours with the advent of 24-hour exchange. Yet the redshift in the velocity of circulation, so there's the slowing down, yet the slowing down in the velocity of circulation only hastens the disappearance of money from the planet, prefigured in the vast sums for Star Wars. So the role of money slowing things down is pretty futile. And if you're going to use it, you got to use it off-planet for Star Wars. Because
yeah, I don't think the red shift means it's slowing down. When a star is, since the universe is considered to be expanding, stars are moving away from us. If they're moving fast enough, then the light shifts from the spectrum of seven colors or whatever colors that star happens to be emitting to a red shift, because the frequency gets stretched out because the thing is moving away, so it's moving. Well, I think when it's moving at you, it's blue shifting. When it's moving away from you, it's red shifting, but the object is still moving at light speed regardless of, or it's still moving at, it's not, the object itself isn't slowing down, but the frequency of the light is either shifted towards the blue when it's coming at you, or it's like, for instance, a train. You hear it coming away from the distance, and you kind of hear it, and then it gets really loud, and then you hear it kind of like trailing off as it goes off into the distance. The train hasn't slowed down. It's just you hear the sound approaching, and then the sound happens, and then you hear it. The sound is diminishing as the train moves away, but there's actually a shift in the frequency of the sound called the Doppler effect, and I forget how to describe that exactly.
No, I understand that. So the point is, he's saying then the redshift is part of the increase velocity of circulation.
Well, it indicates that it's moving away from us, and we're seeing it redshifting as it moves out into the galaxies and off the planet or something.
Right. So it's the digital world is going so fast, it's moving away from even the slowing process of money.
Yeah.
The money, as he says, disappears.
Mm-hmm.
So, he says already money is giving place.
So then why does it go to 20? If it's slowing the process, how come it goes, and then it ends up going into 24-hour exchange, even longer hours with the advent of the 24-hour exchange?
Well, slows the process, and then to slow it even more, it has to have more time to slow.
Right.
So makes it work or overwork into a 24-hour exchange so that it can continue helping to slow the process longer.
Mm-hmm.
So it's panic, and it ain't going to work
mm-hmm.
because money is going to not be able to slow the process. But it did for a while,
yeah.
At least in the 80s. Already money has given place to its opposite, credit, in the creation out of nothing, ex nihilo, which marks all contemporary advances from insider training to takeover bids. Just how far the game is up becomes evident in the repudiation of the debts of the large corporations over the working class. Like, they don't even bother dealing with debt anymore.
They just keep subsuming new companies. You know?
Yeah.
We'll just buy up all these new resources, and then we'll have more capital.
Yeah, they actually juggle people's cities and industrial environments. Rather than money, they dump the whole environments. The old industrial environments.
Yeah.
And everything becomes bankrupt. And everything is owned, possessed by the other, so that the economy can only run on empty.
Mm-hmm.
On empty in quotes. Money becomes the spent fuel of an overheated reactor. That's the digital world. Nobody knows what to do with it, yet all know it must be expended. So it's like an old medium, which doesn't go away, and you got to use it, so you expend it, and that includes giving it away or canceling people's debts just so it still appears to be alive. But it's a desperate situation. Because money as value, he continues, only appears at the vanishing point of its afterimage. It's not even there. And then you have a vanishing point of it, And therefore, it becomes valuable because at least it reminds you of when there was a time you could slow down the process.
Mm-hmm.
It is no longer one's filthy lucre, only that of the sanitized electronic display of the computer monitor. It's just O's and ones. For money always moves on in its role as a chief vagrant of the collapsing capitalist economy.
Mm-hmm.
It almost reaches redshift. It starts going off into Star Wars and leaving the planet, trying to keep up with the digital space.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, Kroger's trying to visualize a very complex, invisible process, since the information environment as ground is tactile.
Right.
But the tactility then becomes figure as the digital maelstrom assumes the intergalactic proportions.
Right.
And then you have the corporate raiders in the 80s. They come in riding on their satellites. They're like Rumpelstiltskins on my chart and hijack whole industries and pump them up and then dump them.
Yeah.
So all of the industrial world that money was the lubricant for is totally vulnerable to be expended in waste and accumulation under the digital conditions.
Yeah. It seems to me we're still approaching that Karl Marx's greatest nightmare, which is that capitalism leads to monopolies, and it seems like corporations are still the bigger fish is eating the biggest fish, to the point where I don't know how many more fish there are left to eat before it's all owned by one. The whole world's owned by one person.
Yeah, but ownership isn't a deal. It's participation.
Uh-huh.
It has to have people to circulate the goods.
Yeah, but it all happens under the logo of one corporate entity as opposed to several hundred corporate entity, which supposedly creates competition and...
No, they create niche markets. They create all kinds of social movements that fragment the population into demographics. So you got gay consumers, lesbian consumers, black consumers. Everybody they create difference. The
mm-hmm.
postmodern notion of difference, fragmentation, helps to divvy up and hide the fact it's owned by one corporation.
Mm.
So Big Brother, as McLuhan said, goes inside. So secretly, one person owns everything, and that could be symbolized by the White House. But the White House represents millions of industries and all the thriving, pulsating global economy,
mm-hmm.
which is made up of all these different niches.
Right. And nowadays, with YouTube communities, people getting together and creating little YouTube clusters, they could be creating their own little cottage industries from the ground up.
Yeah. Well, that's what Thompson saw, that the working class poor in England, the kids, they create their own industry.
Mm-hmm.
And what it is providing content for the old broadcast media.
Mm-hmm.
Increasingly, this is 20 years now since Kroker wrote this, and then the broadcast media, the analog media, they fragmented into digital narrow broadcasting, but it allows more images to happen that smaller and smaller groups of people, but still enough to create a little consumership or audience for some fragmented image.
Right.
But that has devastating effects on the older images people have of where they live and what their community is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, well, it's wiping out culture at all levels.
Right, and the body. So the next quote deals with this. So let's go into the next quote, Panic Noise. It's going to go right from, and I probably selected this because it was in this order. You can work your way through it. Well, we're going to look at the disservices of it as Kroker lays out in the section called Panic Noise, which comes after Panic Money.
Mm.
So can we read that a bit?
Yeah. Let me just, one more thing that's probably relevant before we get off the money topic, because you said that...
I just want to say this. Remember, everything is owned, possessed by the other, so that the economy can only run on empty. That means a debt that no one can repay. So it's not a big issue. So the phrase on empty is pretty interesting.
Well, who's the other in this equation?
Anybody else.
Mm.
The banker needs the customer.
Yeah. Well, you know, back in David Hume's day, he argued that low interest rates are result not from an increase in the money supply, but from an increased savings. Well, we're seeing low interest rates today, but it's certainly not from increased savings. So there's other factors at play. Probably the fact that since we've moved manufacturing offshore to places with more kind of slave labor, lower wages, they can afford to sell stuff for less, and that probably keeps inflation and interest rates down.
Yes, the slow medium money had to go to slower parts of the world.
Mm-hmm.
To keep its function of parasitism and maintaining the slowness for chemical bodies to register,
right,
to consume.
Yeah. I guess there'll probably always be a slower place to move to as China begins to come up to speed.
Have to go to the moon.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned that Croker props up or advances amplifies. No, Croker amplifies Marx. Karl Marx is one of the guys that he's...
Well, no, Croker finds value in rereading Marx, Heidegger, and Nietzsche.
Uh-huh.
His latest book is.
Oh, okay.
But you'll see these guys are lurking in there, and it's all his writing.
Yeah, because I came across this quote by Karl Marx who argued that all profit, rent, and interest are, quote, surplus value. And I've heard Croker used the word surplus flesh.
Yeah.
So he's taking Marx there and bringing him up to modern.
Applying it to the discount of the fact.
Yeah.
Now, remember, the transition from McLuhan to Croker is Baudrillard's commentary, and he wrote in the 70s the uselessness of the Marxist economic paradigm in the new software environment, the information society.
Mm-hmm.
So Croker learns a lot of this stuff as applied to economics from Jean Baudrillard.
Oh. But does
Baudrillard died a couple of weeks ago.
Right. Does Baudrillard think that capitalism then prevails, or that it's some other model?
He calls it the simulacrum. It's not capitalism. It's not communism. It's a hyper-real simulacrum or images.
Mm.
And so you have, he's intuiting that they're running on empty, so he says we have symbolic exchange.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. That's interesting.
Yeah, so he is a Marxist scholar in France in the 1670s. He decided to say the Communist Party of France and the rest of the world didn't know what they're talking about anymore.
Hmm. So in the 60s and 70s, we called it the media and the news, and in the 80s, we called it the simulacrum.
Yeah.
On your chart, the Android meme rerun phase.
Right. Well, not the rerun. The rerun's in the 90s. After simulacrum becomes either me, the Android meme, or before me, the crash theory of Croker. He called it crash theory. And then after that's the Android meme or the after image of the Android meme.
Right. Well, the Android meme, I thought he was doing his thing in the 80s, and then we get the after image in the 90s.
Right, so I'm...
But the Android meme...
Croker's doing the Android meme. He's a little hyper, a little further along than Simulacra of Baudrillard.
Right.
But Baudrillard eventually drops Simulacra and gets into his 90s writing. He realizes, and he's in a way describing the Android meme. So the way I understand the Android meme, Croker and Baudrillard describing it, but I'm talking about the after image of that.
Well, you say the Android meme replays the historical process.
Yeah, in 60 to 90, and then it is an after image, just as we describe money as an after image. So where Croker says money is value only appears at the vanishing point of its after image, we could say the Android meme as value only appears at the vanishing point of its after image. That's the 90s when the dot-com boom happened. It appeared as valuable.
And now you're saying the 90s is the rerun decade?
My chart is that made in the middle 90s. It's an image of the 90s, and it's, if you look at the dates, it's an image from 60 to 90.
Oh, okay. I thought we'd established that the 80s was the rerun.
That's an aspect of the Android meme.
Uh-huh.
But then that's over with end of the Cold War and Cold Fusion announced. But these are just hidden grounds. They're not even noticed by people.
Right.
And my chart is a chart of the effects preceding the causes.
Right.
So people think it's a rerun period in the 80s, and it is, but the 90s is not a rerun period.
It's not.
It's the period of the Android meme for most people.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm saying that it's actually the after image of the Android meme.
Right.
And that's why Y2K didn't happen.
Right.
That's why the dot-com economy collapsed.
Well, yeah, I guess. You could think of why the dot-com economy collapsed in very simple terms, which is that nobody understood that the model for advertising and marketing in the internet, because it was a new domain, it was a new space, but everybody thought that they had to get on it quick because it's panic money. This is the next frontier. If you don't get in now, you're going to be lost forever. Everybody dogpiles in, but nobody understands the new model of distribution and advertising. They haven't figured it out yet. And so people are dumping tons of money in there, and it's just going it down the drain.
Right, because they are trying to translate the analog media lubricant, advertising, into a digital situation where there's nothing to advertise because everybody can engage in the environment on their own relatively cheaply.
Right.
Especially as it gets more in the late 90s, early naughty knots this decade, they're able to make their own content more and more.
Mm-hmm.
So in the 90s, they provided, the big machines provided content.
Right.
That was a big deal. But then that collapsed when people could make their own content.
Right.
In this decade.
Right.
So you got some rapid phases happening here.
Right. But then people did figure out models for business models for the internet, and now they're doing business in ways that they never imagined back in, you know, in the 90s.
And selling surveillance. They're hooking up with the Patriot Bill and using it for building a friendly big brother.
Well, I guess, but you have Amazon, eBay, and, these mega giants, Google, that are just making huge, vast sums of profits.
Yeah, well, that's the supernova of money.
Yeah.
And they're always in a state of anxiety and need to buy up the next new environment.
Yeah. Well, I think that's always kind of been true in business, that you can never say, okay, we don't want to get any bigger than this. You have to keep expanding. It seems to be part of the model of economics.
Well, that's McLuhan's definition of visual space. It is forever aggrandizing, expanding, because it's exclusive.
Mm-hmm.
It includes everything, it swallows everything, but it's looking for boundaries and horizons that it can see to swallow.
Mm-hmm.
That gets contradicted by the implosion of the electric age.
Mm-hmm.
So tactile space frustrates money's move to contain everything.
Mm-hmm.
And fill in its gaps.
Mm-hmm.
Its insatiable appetite.
Mm-hmm.
Or expression of that for people.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
So there's the dilemma for the businessman and the citizen, is that you got these, what McLuhan defined as a schizophrenic process of the continuing of specialist money as an expansionary, exclusive process, which would tend towards making more the owners smaller and smaller. Right, as they compete over who's going to own the whole frame.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's up against an imploding environment that, once it gets into the digital world, allows everybody to participate, though they don't have any money while they do it.
Mm-hmm.
And neither does money have any money.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, you end up with Enron running on empty and needing money because it had to be expended, so they received it from others in the form of loans, but called it profits.
Yeah.
I mean, Enron's a good example of understanding the contradictions of the old money paradigm.
Enron would just create another, they would needed more money, they'd create another 30, 40 different businesses that were designed to do business with Enron, those businesses would then get loans from the bank, and they would guarantee the loans to the bank, saying, well, if this business fails, Enron's will guarantee the loan anyway.
That's right. And that's what Croker says here on page 90 of my book. He says, just opening it, he says, just how far the game is up becomes evident in the repudiation of the debts of the large corporations or of the working class. Mm-hmm. Everything is owned, possessed by the other. So it's tribalism. It's no longer individual property. Everybody owns the whole environment, and everybody must participate, or at least a certain part of the population. Not everybody. Just need...
Yeah, well, when Enron was causing rolling blackouts in Northern California, I don't think people felt like they were participants in the economy at that time.
Ah, but they were participating in their computer, which was a digital environment, and that digital ground allowed the old analog media, like electric utilities, to be bought up by companies like Enron.
Right.
So it was an effect of their new environment impinging on their older environments.
Right. Enron went from a company that used to lay the cables and build the generators and provide the electricity to industry and to homes, to a company that no longer did anything at all to do with hardware or electricity. They just became distributors. They became
manipulators of the old electric environments they built.
Right.
All for the statistical expending of money or maintaining an ownership position in this digital economy. So that money represents the Gutenbergian archetype. I say this in my interview in Paranoia Magazine that's on the stands next week. I talk about how the Western individualist ownership archetype is what keeps money going.
Mm-hmm.
So Enron has to keep buying so that they can claim to own more, so they can get closer to the top of the heap.
Mm-hmm.
And the top of the heap is that one world ownership, or that global monopoly, which has been, probably happened over the last 60 years many times.
Yeah. Well, they couldn't keep it going, though. I mean, it did finally, the jig was up.
Yeah, now that's what I explain, on my chart.
Mm-hmm.
The Android meme ran out. We have a new ground.
Mm-hmm.
And that new ground is cold fusion, but it ain't arrived yet.
Mm.
Its effects are here, and so we are running around paleolithically, beating each other up, creating wealth out of terror. That's probably what I mean about Big Brother is what kept the dot-com world going, is that it's now serviced to technological protection against terror.
Mm-hmm.
National security.
Right. And
so terror is the thing that is the ground that creates the wealth today.
Hmm.
And so the older medium of the digital is hijacked for that new ground, or at least mood.
Yeah. When the new technology comes in, it always creates warfare between the old technology, which becomes, I guess, content for the new technology.
Yeah. So let's read this this section, Panic Noise, because it develops from what we're talking about. We're basically dealing with, in Croker land, the transition from analog electric media, which is the McLuhan zone, into the digital media, right?
Right.
So let's see what happens.
Okay, Panic Noise. If the Newtonian law of gravity could postulate a real, that's italicized, a real body, whose objectivity is established in its mass.
By its mass.
By its mass. The quantum, in parentheses, the quantum law of postmodernity eclipses this body by flipping suddenly from mass to energy. We now live in a hypermodern world where panic noise, and this next section is all in parentheses, the electronic soundtrack of TV, rock music in the age of advanced capitalism, white sound in all of the, quote, future shops, unquote, end of parentheses.
That's all panic noise.
Appears.
We now live in a hypermodern world where panic noise appears.
Appears a kind of affective hologram providing a veneer of coherency for the reality of an imploding culture.
Now, you see, what I've been saying in the past 10 minutes is echoed in this sentence, right?
Mm-hmm.
I talked about implosion. And,
right.
And the chemical body. So then okay, carry on.
When mass disappears into energy, then the body, too, becomes the focus and secretion of all of the vibrations of the culture of panic noise. Indeed, the postmodern body is, at first, a hum, then a, quote, good vibration, unquote, and finally the afterimage of the hologram of panic noise, invaded, lacerated, and punctuated, and punctured by vibrations, and this is parenthesized, the quantum physics of noise.
So invaded, lacerated, and punctured by vibrations, the body.
Mm-hmm. The body simultaneously implodes, that's italicized, into its own senses and then explodes, that's italicized, as its central nervous system is splayed across the sensorium of the technoscape. No longer a material entity, the postmodern body becomes an infinitely permeable and spatialized field whose boundaries are freely pierced by subatomic particles in the microphysics of power. Once the veil of materiality slash subjectivity has been transgressed, and then in parentheses, and abandoned, then the body as something real vanishes into the specter of hyperrealism. Now it is the postmodern body as space, linked together by force fields and capable of being represented